Well, we are less than a week away from the Michigan presidential primary next Tuesday. A number of candidates are making last-minute trips to secure votes in our Great Lakes state. Yesterday, Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders visited East Lansing for a spirited rally at Michigan State University. Current state's Kevin Lavery was there and has this report.
3 hours before Bernie Sanders was set to appear at a Michigan State University rally, thousands of people braved the bitter chill in a huge line that nearly encircled the Breslin Center. Whether all those Sanders supporters were actually feeling the burn or the first stages of frostbite, their spirits were high.
Feel the burn, baby.
Joe Gamache came from Flint to attend the rally. The self-described hip-hop artist sported a black hoodie emblazoned with the slogan, Flint Lives Matter, a not-so-subtle nod to the ongoing water crisis in the city. Gamache says Bernie Sanders already has his vote.
Bernie's my guy because I feel like he has the most integrity out of any candidate. He's honest and he's been consistent. You know, his whole career, he's been fighting for the same things, you know, healthcare, civil rights, gay rights, the things that really matter in this world, climate change. You know, he's talking about the issues that matter and not just the things that people want to hear, you know.
Inside, the candidate received a rock star's welcome. Sanders was fresh from the Super Tuesday that had brought him victories in Minnesota, Colorado, Oklahoma, and his home state of Vermont. Still, the spoils of Super Tuesday had gone to his Democratic rival, Hillary Clinton. But if there had been any lingering disappointment in the Sanders camp, it certainly did not show on the senator's face. Bernie Sanders began his speech with the populist rhetoric of a democracy that's accessible to everyone, not merely the rich.
In America, it shouldn't just be a billionaire or Wall Street that is able to contribute hundreds of millions of dollars to the candidates they like, but ordinary people, young people, working people, senior citizens who are able to say, this is my country, this is where I want it to go.
Sanders told the crowd at MSU that his campaign has been doing so well because he's been listening to the American people and not wealthy contributors. Sanders garnered some of his most enthusiastic applause from the droves of students who had come to hear his plans for education, specifically making college more affordable.
Why are we punishing millions of people because they wanted to get a decent education? Why are people in this country paying off student loans for 10, 20, 30 years? That is crazy. And that is why I believe we need to make public colleges and universities tuition free.
Sanders also addressed the ongoing crisis in Flint, the city he'll visit on Sunday for a face-to-face debate with Hillary Clinton. Sanders said he heard heartbreaking stories from Flint parents worried about their children's physical health and mental development, and he called on Michigan's top Republican to step down.
It goes without saying that we have got to move and move boldly to rebuild Flint. I believe, and I say this not in a political way, but it's what I believe, that the dereliction of duty from the governor is so high that he should resign.
Sanders spoke for nearly an hour, and it was clear that many in the crowd left the Breslin Center with a renewed sense of motivation.
And what's your name?
My name is Jonathan Wharton.
What resonated about Bernie's speech with you?
Well, I just felt like he spoke for the people. It sounded like he really cared. He didn't sound like a politician. He sounded just like a regular person.
We loved everything that we heard. It was great to hear him in person.
It was really cool.
The kids are super excited. We're all super pumped, and we can't wait to vote next Tuesday.
Because Bernie's going to win.
We're feeling the burn.
Feeling the burn.
Did you know much about Bernie before tonight?
Oh, we knew a lot about Bernie, yes. We were just really excited to hear it from
Bernie's
his mouth.
Bernie's awesome.
Love breathing the same air as him.
Can I have at least one of your names?
My name's Sarah. Tebow.
Like Tim Tebow?
Without the W.
Without the W.
Yes.
T-E-B-O.
Michigan voters head to the polls for the state's presidential primary on Tuesday. For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Around the country, the Democratic and Republican frontrunners prevailed on Super Tuesday. So what does that mean as the seven remaining presidential candidates prepare for Tuesday's Michigan primary? And how might the candidates' recent fortunes impact their approaching Michigan debates? Yesterday, Current State's Mark Bayshore sat down with Michigan State political science professor Matt Grossman. Grossman is also director of the MSU Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. Mark first asked Professor Grossman for his thoughts on Super Tuesday results.
Big nights for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton has a clear path to the nomination, and it will be difficult for Bernie Sanders to catch up without a fairly massive swing in the national electorate. On the Republican side, Trump is well ahead of the route to the nomination, but there's other candidates still with a chance. Rubio and Cruz both have routes to win the nomination or to get more delegates than Trump, but they're both uphill battles.
Now, Donald Trump solidified his lead on Tuesday. How might that impact tonight's Republican debate in Detroit?
Well, I think even before that, they were likely to go after Trump, as they did in the last debate. But it does seem more like there's a third of the Republican electorate who is pretty solid for Trump. And there's been an inability to coordinate around an alternative to Trump. And so there may also be some incentive to mix it up among the remaining alternatives.
How, if at all, do you think the Super Tuesday results impact Sunday night's debate in Flint between the Democrats? A lot smaller field, obviously.
We have been hotly contested. They've actually already spent more money in Michigan than they did in a lot of the Super Tuesday states. So the Democratic candidates are both viewing Michigan as a battleground. I think Hillary Clinton has also been using the Flint crisis as part of her national outreach to African Americans, and specifically has been running ads on that in Michigan as well. So I expect its location of the debate in Flint to come up quite a bit. And be part of both trying to win Michigan and trying to appeal to the African-American electorate nationally.
Well, candidate messaging, campaign messaging, is a focus of yours. Do you expect that to be altered in any way as a result of Super Tuesday?
Well, Hillary Clinton is running a very traditional Democratic campaign where you reach out to different constituencies with slightly different messages. You have a laundry list of proposals and hope someone likes at least one of those proposals or one of those kinds of outreach attempts. And that's working for her. You can see that she's losing some groups in the Democratic coalition, but she has enough to accumulate a majority. On the Republican side, it's different than normal, certainly coming from Donald Trump. Ted Cruz is running your traditional conservative outsider campaign. Marco Rubio is running something of a mix between that and your establishment campaign. And Donald Trump is one of a kind in campaign messaging.
Our guest is Matt Grossman, head of MSU's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. We're talking about the impact of Super Tuesday, the upcoming Michigan debates among the candidates, and the Michigan primary next Tuesday. Now, in the aftermath of Super Tuesday, what relevance does Tuesday's Michigan primary have?
I think will be very relevant. It will be an opportunity. If Bernie Sanders could pull out a victory, that would change the trajectory of the race somewhat. So that leaves it open as a possibility on the Democratic side, even though that's unlikely. And on the Republican side, we're likely to be the sort of last stand for John Kasich before we start moving to winner-take-all states like Ohio and Florida. We're at least potentially competitive for Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. So I think we'll be looked at as the last national microcosm before we switch to those big winner-take-all prizes of Ohio and Florida.
Let's talk a bit about the sea change that Donald Trump's candidacy is having on the Republican Party. There are reports of a Stop Trump super PAC being formed by the Republican establishment. At the same time, Trump has dominated the primaries and is the clear choice of more Republican voters than anybody else. What do you make of this landscape?
Well, it's quite odd that it's taken so long. If you think about it, we've had a front runner for 6 months, and he's not taken most of the blows. Only 4% of the Super PAC advertising has been anti-Trump so far. And especially in these Super Tuesday states, you did not see a lot of active ad campaigns against Trump. So if they develop enough money, even to run Iowa and South Carolina-size anti-Trump campaigns would require a significant investment. And if they can outdo that, there still is a chance that that would reduce Donald Trump's support. The problem has always been the different actors don't know who that would help. So if you're the Rubio or the Cruz campaign, do you attack Trump knowing that it might help the other alternative?
Republicans, it seems, are being forced to assess whether a Trump candidacy is actually good for their party or not good for their party. To resist or to go along, is it fair to put it that way?
Well, I think most believe it's not good for the party, but it might be worse to try some kind of tactic to take it away from Donald Trump. There are some people saying that he'll might expand the electorate, and there's a little bit of evidence of that. But I think mostly people think it's bad news for the party. But the difficulty all along has been that Cruz has been there as a potential alternative, and a whole lot of Republicans think he would be even worse in a general election or for the direction of the party. So it's hard to stop the front runner, but it's even harder to stop the two front runners for some alternative. And that's the task that Republican leaders have set for themselves.
Utah Governor Michael Leavitt, former Utah Governor Michael Leavitt, who is not a Trump supporter, he's an anti-Trump guy, told NPR on Tuesday that one scenario for stopping Trump is that competitors could join forces, presumably, I guess we're talking Rubio and Kasich, at least Jeb Bush perhaps as well, obviously not Chris Christie, but all these various Republican establishment candidates. How viable an approach is that for the anti-Trump faction in the GOP?
I don't think you'll see a formal alliance, but there's two possibilities for coordination. One is that if it looked like, for example, John Kasich was going to win Ohio or had a good chance to defeat Trump there, it really might be in the interests of the other alternatives to campaign elsewhere, like Florida or Illinois, rather than against Kasich in Ohio. And then the other alternative is that they may continue on for quite a while. All of them try to become the delegate leader going into the convention under this tacit assumption that Rubio would release his delegates to Cruz or Cruz would release his delegates to Rubio should the other one be the most likely victor.
Do you feel Trump's success may alter the campaign landscape permanently? Do you think candidates with this ready, fire, aim approach may become more common in the future? Have we crossed some kind of threshold here, given his success?
Well, there have been a few examples in state politics, like Jesse Ventura and Arnold Schwarzenegger, where you've seen these kinds of styles of campaigns being run, but we haven't seen it at the national level. You're already seeing Marco Rubio sort of copy Donald Trump's style in some way. I think future candidates might be more open to attacking lots of other candidates, as Trump has been, and not paying much of a price for it, and sort of reduce the level of the discourse in future campaigns because it doesn't seem that Trump is paying a price for saying what's on his mind.
Because it seems to connect with whatever degree of anger is out there amongst the electorate. Is that really what's driving this thing?
I think there's a few different factors. You have to be a little bit careful between saying, well, angry people supported Trump, so therefore that's what's driving them, because often if someone's supporting Trump, they might get angry as a result of listening to him say that. So we often sort of confuse which one came first. But I'd say in Trump's case, he had a base of nativist support that came from his attacks on President Obama's birth certificate and his immigration and anti-trade attitudes that he began with. But he was able to expand that pretty far by being the dominant candidate in media coverage for the last year and by having a dominant personality and being a well-known celebrity since the 1980s.
Matt Grossman's our guest. Again, Matt is head of the MSU Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at the Department of Political Science here at MSU. We're talking about the impact of Super Tuesday, the upcoming Michigan debates among the candidates and the Michigan primary next Tuesday. A Trump-Clinton general election in November would offer an amazingly stark contrast between a non-politician business mogul and a consummate political insider, a machine politician of a sort. What kind of campaign would you anticipate?
A very nasty one. We have two candidates that are both well-known, both have high negatives, and that means that the best route to success for both sides might be to scare voters into supporting them over an alternative that is worse. Negative campaigning and fear promotion is also going to be important for voter mobilization, especially in the Democratic Party, where there's an opportunity to have higher voter turnout due to fear of Donald Trump and a risk that Hillary Clinton won't be quite as exciting a candidate as Bernie Sanders or other potential candidates. So I think you'll see a very negative race from the beginning for the full stretch of the campaign.
Could more Americans become alienated from politics by that kind of campaign?
We don't have a lot of evidence that it, say, reduces voter turnout or makes people completely turn off politics, but it does raise people's concerns about government and politics. And one reason that you're seeing outsider candidates successful is because we've heard 50 years of political campaigns and advertising saying all politicians are corrupt and they're out for themselves. That leads people to take on those attitudes. So I don't think they'll divorce themselves from politics as a result, but it'll reinforce these anti-political and anti-government attitudes that are already out there.
Does the Republican divide suggest a latent third party in U.S. politics?
Well, the block for a third party has always been institutional. It's always been that we have single-member districts, we have an electoral college and a presidential system. It hasn't been the lack of potential support for a third party. And every major democracy has a nativist movement, most of which become a third party. So parties like the National Front and the UK Independence Party have long been based on anti-immigration, anti-trade, and nationalist attitudes. There's a constituency with those attitudes in the U.S. as well. It's just historically been a little suppressed because neither party has an incentive to sort of bring out those minority positions. But you're seeing it in this campaign. The big question will be, do your traditional conservative Republicans stick with Donald Trump and move the party in that direction? Or do they try to break off and form their own conservative candidate for this election? Because I don't see a whole lot going to Hillary Clinton.
Isn't Trump's appeal among conservatives even more surprising, given some of his positions pro-choice? Not that long ago, he spoke highly of single-payer health care or a system very similar to single-payer health care. 4 years ago, I'm flashing back on 4 years ago, it seems that any Republican candidate who stood at any time for both of those things would have been laughed out of the room. It's meant nothing so far, it seems.
Well, I do think that certainly there's a lot of differences of opinion within the Republican electorate. There aren't clearly shared issue attitudes, even though there is a shared ideological label of conservative. Different Republicans mean different things by that term. But I wouldn't say that Trump has been running on those more liberal positions. He's been running on more right-wing or America First positions on immigration and other issues. So if you were just tuning in, that may be what you hear of Donald Trump. You may think that he's a pretty conservative guy because those are the positions that he's emphasizing.
We want to thank our guest, Matt Grossman, head of MSU's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. He'll be watching the debates. He'll be watching the Michigan primary, I'm sure, on Tuesday. Matt, thank you.
Thank you. And we'll have our own survey release on Monday. So look out for that.
We'll be looking for it.